Welcome back to FTI Consulting's Step Up Series, a podcast that explores the buzz of starting up as an entrepreneur, scaling up global companies, and stepping up to the societal challenges that business leadership can help fix. Today we meet Olivia Siboney, dealmaker on UK Government Global Entrepreneur Programme, interviewed by our very own Elizabeth Adams, Senior Managing Director in London.
Great stuff. Olivia, thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed as part of our Step Up series. So without further ado, may I ask you to perhaps tell us in your own voice about your roles as an entrepreneur and enabler of other entrepreneurs, please?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, and I'm delighted that you're doing this series. So my name is Olivia Siboney, and I wear a number of hats, but essentially everything that I do really converges under the purpose of using business as a force for good. I believe that business has the greatest capacity to enable the greatest and fastest change in order to address some of our largest social and environmental challenges. So I do this, as I say, under a number of hats, but really the two main ones are my startup, which I run, called Seed Tribe. And Seed Tribe is a platform which connects impactful entrepreneurs marrying profit with purpose, which we'll talk about in a moment. We match make these entrepreneurs with angel investors. And I have another hat where I work for the Department for International Trade. And what I do there is I work with impactful entrepreneurs from anywhere around the world who are scaling and looking to move their headquarters to the UK.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. First of all, could we focus a little bit on this point around profit with purpose? We're hearing a lot more post-COVID, during COVID, about green economic recovery. There's a lot of talk around about ESG, environmental, social and governance. Can you tell us a bit more about Seed Tribe and exactly what the sorts of companies that you're working with are doing vis-a-vis profit with purpose? What does that mean?
Of course. So what's interesting at the moment is, as it's a relatively nascent and very fast-growing concept, one of the challenges is a lot of people have different definitions around it. But I urge people to, you know, look into it and, you know, make their own opinion rather than be cynical about some people's approach, especially in the ESG space. My particular theory of change, my approach to this, is very much around aligning the business model with your purpose. So what I mean by that is the business model itself is addressing a social or environmental challenge. And the more you address that challenge, the more money you make and the more positive social or environmental impact you are going to have. So the idea is very much that there is no compromise between your business model and the impact that you are looking to have. So to give you a specific example, you could have, on the environmental side, you will have energy saving devices, where the more devices you sell, the more money you make, of course, but also the more you will help people reduce their emissions. You can have machines that contain bacteria that you put at the entrance of sewers, and the bacteria eats the dirty water and spits it out clean again, and feeds itself from this dirt, that's what it loves, and produces energy. And that energy actually then goes on to power the systems that it is integrated into. So it's a completely closed loop system. It doesn't need any external energy, while also cleaning sewers and trying to reduce the instances of fatberg and the likes. So that's a perfect example whereby the more machines they sell, the more money they make, but at the same time, the more clean water we have popped back into our water systems. You can have that on a social perspective as well. So usually that tends to be a medical device. So we work with people who use big data to detect the early signs of cancer, and work with the NHS and big charities. So again, you know, the more business they do, the more contracts they have, the more they can detect early signs of cancer and hopefully reduce the number of people who have cancer.
So this feels like a win-win situation for business, for society and the environment. And in that respect, a bit of a kind of no-brainer. So why aren't all businesses doing this?
I would say there's a change in people's attitude. I think until recently, people were not so aware of the enormity of some of the challenges that are facing us, in particular on the environmental side. I would say the social challenges might have always been there, but people were not as concerned about them. But environmentally, I mean, there's no escaping the fact that climate change is happening, and it will have a really, really big impact on us. So with that in mind, essentially, we have started looking at where these challenges come from, these problems come from. And a lot of it stems from the systemic way in which businesses have been set up. And we need to redress that change. So I would say generally greater awareness of some of these growing challenges have, you know, it's a little bit like the pandemic. There's nothing like a good crisis to really sharpen your senses and get you focused. And this is really a big motivator for people to want to do business differently. And with this awareness, I think it starts, you know, these businesses start cropping up a lot.
This is really interesting. And so what we're saying is that there is an increased focus on profit for purpose. And would you say that's being driven by SMEs, by entrepreneurs who are sort of, you know, new in this kind of space and this idea? Or is it something that bigger businesses are doing too? And thinking of that, if you're an entrepreneur, either with a business that you would like to have a better, you know, sort of profit for purpose aspect, or you are thinking of starting a business that is a profit for purpose business, what sort of should people be thinking about? What should they be reading? What should they be keeping an eye on? You know, can you sort of point to some best practice in the profit for purpose space?
Absolutely. So I'm of course both biased and probably an evangelist, but in my mind, I do not understand how now one would start a business that would not address a social or environmental challenge. To me, it's a complete no-brainer. And where there is no compromise, I find it an extremely exciting opportunity. And I actually find that I get inundated with people who want to be part of the journey and want to help, because people feel so aligned to the purpose and the greater mission. And it's no longer just about the purpose of making money. It's about the purpose of the challenge you're looking to address, and at the same time you happen to be making money from it. So it's reframing how you look at it. And therefore, if you are a wantrepreneur looking to set up a new business, there's a number of things you can do. I mean, my goodness, you could just open the newspaper and read the news, find a challenge in the world. Goodness knows that there are enough that are reported on that really, really bugs you, and look at turning it on its head. And every problem that is highlighted is also, can also be called a challenge. And therefore, if you look at it from a different angle, there must be a solution to finding it. So the starting point for me would be to, you know, what is it that keeps you awake at night? What is it that really, really bugs you? And look to find a way that that you can turn that problem on its head to make it a challenge and find a solution for it. One of the things that I find helpful is just looking at what other entrepreneurs do and being inspired by some of the work that they do. I mean, people can look on they can look on my website, Seeds Tribe, where there's you know, we list a lot of businesses addressing these challenges. You can also look at have a look at B Corp. B Corp is a little bit different. It's much broader in this ESG space, whereby ESG doesn't necessarily focus the actual business model on purpose. It may do, and ideally a B Corp does, but it might also just be looking to do business in the most ethical and sustainable possible way. And again, the more you read people's impact reports, and again, in B Corp, you have to report your impact. The more reports you read around how companies are solving some of these challenges, the better position, you know, the more inspired you can be. And you might actually find that, you know, there is certain, you know, use your skills, use your experience, use your speciality. And, you know, it might be that you come from a corporate environment whereby there was something that was really, really bothering you. Maybe you can service that industry by addressing that particular challenge. While there is a growing interest and concern about some of the challenges that we are facing in the world, I think that there's the perfect storm at the moment that entrepreneurs are the ones who have the unfair advantage, as it were, of starting with a clean slate and able to start a new business that has the best possible practices. So yes, entrepreneurs can, you know, are a really key driver in this, but the only reason that an entrepreneur can succeed is because there's also a changing market in consumer attitude where people increasingly care about this. And the more people care about it, the more governments will listen and look to implement policies that help enable these kinds of businesses or solutions to be addressed. So to me, it's a perfect storm of all of these together. And this is a really, really good time to be able to start these kinds of businesses. But I would really start with what it is that keeps you awake at night and look at that.
I love it. It's really fascinating to sort of hear, because I tend to work with bigger companies, and so hearing it from the smaller company perspective is really great. I'm just curious if we have a moment just to sort of drill down a little bit into the differences and the overlap between purpose and between ESG. I know a lot of smaller companies and bigger companies for that matter are grappling with environmental, social and governance and you know, trying to work out where it fits in the business, what it is, how it applies to them. And then you've got this concept of purpose as well. Can you just talk to us a bit about the experience in the startup and entrepreneur-led community and the marriage of those two? I mean, does ESG matter to small companies? Should they be worrying about that, or should they be worrying more about purpose in the first instance? Just share your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I mean, my first piece of advice on that is never let perfect be the enemy of good. You need to start somewhere. And for me as a startup, I would start with purpose, because ultimately, unless you marry profit and purpose from the outside, you are so likely to have mission creep. My first startup was a food tech platform, and it was born out of my desire to change the food system, to make it more sustainable, to make people more engaged with understanding where their food came from and loving, you know, sharing meals together and really bringing that joy and respect of food back in. But I didn't really fully integrate the actual purpose of my business into the business model. And as we looked to scale and bring more and more investors on board, we just had to demonstrate these hockey stick curves, which were slightly, you know, that were not completely aligned to my social and environmental ethics. And I always thought I could just sort of add them on. And honestly, I really struggled, because actually as a startup and you're always trying to juggle everything, it's very difficult to make everything work together. So my advice is to, firstly, as a startup, get the profit and purpose aligned. Don't worry about the rest. Just get that in place. And then over time, then you can make the rest work. You know, nothing is going to be perfect from the outset. And just be transparent. Just explain that it's a journey and, you know, you are on this mission, and bit by bit, you will make it better. If you're making, there's a wonderful clothing, sort of underwear, loungewear organization called Stripe and Stare. And I love their approach. I mean, they make extremely comfortable, sustainably sourced, totally biodegradable clothing. But at the same time, you know, there are certain aspects that they haven't got quite right. And they're very, very transparent on their website, explaining that this is their journey, this is where they're at. They're not perfect. Some of the technology that they're trying to do doesn't exist yet. Some of the materials in some of the clothing lines that they use are not yet fully biodegradable, so you can't quite throw them on your compost heap yet. But they are just very transparent about them, and they actually ask their customers for ideas to, you know, sort of feedback on possibilities that they can research. So and this was to my point at the very beginning about sort of some level of cynicism, that I think there's a danger of companies, especially probably larger companies, who feel they need to be perfect. And so then this is when the greenwashing comes in, and they just talk about all of the brilliant things that they do without actually mentioning in any way all of the rather less desirable practices. And to me, you know, in particular, startups have this incredible opportunity to say, look, we're a startup. This is where we're going. This is the starting point of the journey. Please come with us. Please, if there's something we're not doing right, tell us. We want to know, because we really, really care about getting this right. But we're learning along the way in a true startup style.
I think it's fascinating, certainly as a consumer myself, you know, you become much more scrutinizing as you read more of the media and you understand more about the impact that we all have in our day-to-day choices. I've always been quite impressed with Ecova and with Riverford VegBox company, who are quite open and transparent about the aspects of their packaging that they haven't quite got right yet, you know, or it doesn't meet their high standards yet. And typically, you know, for Ecova's perspective, that, you know, they're obviously producing a very different combination of products to create their dishwasher tablets or their, you know, washing up liquid, but they're quite open about the fact that, you know, unfortunately they still need plastic to keep the dishwasher tablets dry. I assume because perhaps some of the components are not quite as sophisticated or as able to, you know, withstand moisture, for example. So it is interesting. And I think, you know, we are as consumers much more conscious of honesty and transparency in companies. And I guess it's right to say that, you know, entrepreneurs have this kind of blank slate that they can start from. So it's really, really fascinating to hear. If we could just move on to chat a little bit about COVID. I don't want to labour the point too much, but I do feel that a big part of this kind of consumer engagement and consciousness around the environment and how we recover economically and socially to a degree from the impact of COVID is relevant to this conversation. It seems to me that there's a sort of story of two sides around entrepreneurs and SMEs in COVID, the good and the bad. Just tell us a bit about your perspectives of what impact it has had on not just profit for purpose, but small companies and entrepreneurs and the way that they're approaching business now.
Sure. So what I would say is it's been my perspective on this is in some ways it's been the anti-leveler, and it's concentrated a lot more attention in a lot narrower spaces. So what I would say is, on balance, I would say that new startups have really, really suffered, because ultimately, when you are in lockdown and you're stuck inside your office, you're literally constricted, and there are a lot of things that you can't do, and it's a lot harder to sort of go out there and really speak to people and build engagement and feedback and a good sort of ambassador customer base from the very beginning, which is a really important way to start a business. Really build your evangelists, who are your sort of diehard followers, who will, you know, really sort of love your product and grow with you. Those are really hard to find in the early days. So I tend to find that the brand new entrepreneurs have really, really struggled. Those, however, that the other reason I would say that they struggled is it's a lot harder to meet investors. You know, at the very beginning of your journey, you essentially have an idea. It could be an amazing idea, but you need to have the team behind it, the trust, the execution, for people to really believe that you can do it. And an investor, first and foremost, invests in the team. Now, when you're at the beginning of your journey, you have no traction, you have no proof points, you have no metrics to really demonstrate your worth. And so they have to rely on you as a person. And unless you already know these people, there is even less for them to go on in order to trust you and invest in you. So I would say those very, very early stage entrepreneurs have really suffered. Having said that, on the flip side, those entrepreneurs who are already on the journey, really, really, a lot of them, if they were addressing something that was, you know, aligned to, you know, COVID, new world, as it were, have actually benefited, because a lot of these people have managed to really scale the business, and investors at a time of turmoil realize that the standard markets are no longer the safety nets that they had always relied upon in the past. So when everything is a lot more tumultuous, actually there a lot of people are willing to take a lot more risk. And so a lot of investors tend to actually look at startups and be a lot more willing to take these risks. And so therefore, I mean, Zoom is a perfect example. My goodness, would I have loved to be an early stage investor into Zoom. But I, you know, anything that will enable you to do remote working, anything that enables better education, and, you know, access to remote education. Anyone who was trying to convince doctors or the whole medical profession to go online a lot more and do remote video calls and diagnostics are absolutely booming. The interest in the environment, the understanding of it has also really, really escalated as well. So there are certain areas that have really benefited, and the entrepreneurs who had already started and were on that journey really were able to thrive as a result of that. But I would say it was a lot harder for anyone who relied on physical meetings. My goodness, was I happy not to be running my old social dining business anymore. I'm not sure what imagination I would have had to turn that around. And if you're really starting out in the early days, unless you're a privileged person who has a wide network already, that was a challenge as well.
Fascinating. I'm sure as COVID begins to unwind, at least here in the UK, you know, we'll see what impact the unwind has. Very briefly, before we perhaps come on to talk a bit more about what governments can do to support the role of entrepreneurs and smaller businesses, any perspectives on the sort of geographical impacts, not just of COVID, but of, you know, the sort of lockdown environment that we've been in? Clearly, countries are going up into and down out of lockdown, you know, at very different paces and times. And I just wonder if you've got a sort of more global perspective outside of the UK, or whether those trends that you just discussed are standard across the, or consistent across the board.
So from my personal perspective, this, wearing my Department for International Trade hat on, I have seen an increase in number of entrepreneurs who are scaling and quite simply wanting to move to the UK. I think it's been a lot harder in a lot of the countries, and where there is no furlough scheme, where there isn't the same sort of social medical safety net, and certainly not an economic one, it has been particularly tough. So I've noticed, you know, I've had a, you know, I'll work with any entrepreneur any impactful entrepreneur from any country around the world, but particularly I've seen huge trends of people wanting to come from Turkey, from South Africa, and from Latin America, where there's an incredible network of entrepreneurs, and a really, really wonderful ecosystem, but they are feeling really stuck because they are, you know, completely confined, and it's too chaotic to be able to really scale their businesses. So I've noticed a boom in particular from those countries, from my experience of people, you know, doing fantastic businesses, but actually needing to come to places like the UK where there's a better infrastructure for entrepreneurs.
Very helpful. Thinking with your DIT hat on now, you know, obviously you're working with businesses who are coming into the UK, and there may have been, you know, some challenges with that over the past year. But as we come out of COVID, and hopefully the rest of the world also moves to a better spot, what can the UK government do to support entrepreneurs and smaller businesses in this kind of transition phase towards what will no doubt be another new normal? You know, we've all got used to lockdown home working, and you know, no doubt there will be a sort of hybrid of that, and that has lots of implications for the sorts of things that small businesses are doing. Talk us through a bit about your DIT work and, you know, both what is happening that works well, but also perhaps what you might like to see more of from the UK government, if you can say that.
Sure. So in terms of what I've seen that has been working well, I mean, you know, the government has been very generous in terms of, you know, providing loans to a lot wider group of entrepreneurs who may not have had access to those loans in the past. There's been a lot of there's an incredible, I never realized until I started working at the DIT how much free support there is for entrepreneurs in terms of access to advisors, to networks, to entries into larger organizations. So there's a huge amount of ability to get both coaching, business support, advice, etc., but also access to networks. And to me, ultimately, as an entrepreneur, when you're raising money, the money is to be able to spend on people usually. So actually, there might not be huge amounts of money floating around that isn't readily available. But at the same time, there is actually an incredible wealth of access to networks and really good quality people. So that has been one thing that I have seen has been really, really helpful from the government for entrepreneurs, as well as a huge number of grants. I mean, if you go onto the UK Innovate UK website, there are so many grants available that are, moving a lot faster and a lot more open and generous towards businesses that are looking to build a better post-COVID recovery. In terms of what I'd like to see more of, I would say, for me, actually, the role of the government is around providing that safety net so that people don't fall below a certain line. And that is both socially and environmentally. And, Kate Raworth in the Donut Economics is a sort of wonderful visual exemplification of how we could see a society being built. So for me, I think what is really important is for the government to continue to bring in more policies that limit the environmental damage that we can do, as well as the providing basic sort of social needs. And if companies were obliged to work within these limits, it would create a more equal level playing field, whereby we're operating within this kind of framework. And I think this would enable a lot more new businesses to thrive, because actually the new reality is based within a new set of rules along which we need to operate. And it is easier to sort of start from scratch in that perspective than to retrofit. So whether it's around, for example, I'm extremely excited about the circular economy. I think there is so much incredible opportunity. I see companies taking food waste and turning it into building materials. There's a fabulous company which takes all of the imagine how many chicken feathers are wasted, are thrown to landfill every single day. I mean, it's thousands and thousands of tons of chicken feathers. And
the mind boggles at that point.
Yes, exactly. And I'd never thought of the chicken feathers. But this company takes it and uses it for insulation. At the moment, they use it for the packaging and, food packaging to keep food cold instead of ice packs. But they're also in the process of getting approval for it to be insulation for walls. And there's so much incredible imagination going on and so many wonderful things around the circular economy. And I think the more the government puts a tax on waste, the more this will suddenly become a precious resource and the more people will be inspired to actually look at this and turn it on its head. So those are the kinds of examples that I see could really be a real game changer, and they're fun and exciting as well.
Amazing. Thank you. And can you name two entrepreneurs who most inspire you or have inspired you over your sort of career?
Sure. So actually, I was alluding to it earlier. One of them is an entrepreneur called Giles Tully, and he runs an organization called Pinpoint. And what they do is they use big data in order to detect the early signs of cancer. And I just find it absolutely incredible. I mean, it's actually not a particularly complicated business, and yet it is absolutely revolutionary. And the earlier you can catch the cancer, the more chance you have of avoiding the long-term damage. So he's absolutely incredible. And another wonderful entrepreneur is someone called Jude Owa, and she runs an organization called Playmob. And Playmob is a gaming for good company. And what they do is they use gaming, but they integrate into the games the an idea of purpose, so addressing the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So they, for example, gamify, you know, collecting as much plastic in the ocean as you possibly can, or saving the fish, or, you know, addressing topsoil issues and capturing carbon. And they make it really fun and engaging for children. And I find that absolutely incredible.
Well, I think I know that when my twins are old enough to do gaming, that we'll definitely be going to Playmob rather than anywhere else. A couple of other very quick ones. I know you've just mentioned two companies there, but are there any other companies, small companies, to whom you'd like to give a shout out as they're in the process of stepping up?
So there's, I'm really interested at the moment in, as I was mentioning, circular economy. It's something that I find absolutely fascinating. You know, one of them being the water company with the bacteria that, you know, eats the dirty water. Another one, actually, it's really interesting looking at the fashion industry. The fashion industry is actually hugely wasteful. And there's a lot of companies, there's one at the moment called Looped, very, very early stage company, but they essentially take all of the, get paid to take all of the surplus materials and clothes that never even make it onto the shop shelves, and they work with up-and-coming designers, and the designers essentially are challenged to create new clothes out of these clothes that literally get burnt in landfill, and sell new, brand new clothes that are really, you know, sort of well made out of materials that would have gone to waste. I would say the last area that I'm particularly excited and very passionate about is the agri-tech space. And I think there's incredible innovation going out in that kind of space, whether it's micro-robotics, where these tiny little robots are looking at all of the different, you know, analyzing each individual plant and giving them exactly the nutrients that they need, or whether it's drones that go and oversee the fields and understand all of the sort of hot zones, and they have all of these different sensors in order to understand which specific plants need what kind of treatment. You suddenly no longer have to just mass spray, you know, with what, just one single product, which, you know, we know the terrible impacts of. So I think there's, to me, the agri-tech space is one of the most needed areas for change and one of the most exciting ones as well.
Thank you very much indeed for your time today, and for, in particular, I think the strong, you know, inspiration and view that you're giving around the concept of you know, profit with purpose, and you know, the concepts of therefore purpose itself, thinking about what that means for startups, and of course, the ESG impacts and angle that companies now must think about. And very much looking forward to hearing and researching more about some of those companies that you've mentioned there. So thanks ever so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to FTI Consulting Step Up Series. For more information, head to fticommunications.com and subscribe on Audioboom so you never miss an episode.